I have
current geek.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Current Geek. This is Current Geek. And you know what that is? Well, let me tell you. The weekly proceedings of the meetings of the Frog Pants All-Stars. Geeks of the world and you. To keep you current on all things that matter most, I'm Scott Johnson. That's Tom Merritt. Hi, Tom.
Hey. What's up, Scott Johnson?
What's going on, man?
What's happening? Excited. It's Friday. It's Current Geek time. It's my
You know what? This is a great way to end the week because I had a scary week. My son had an appendicitis, an emergency one, and we had to all freak out about that. Yeah, so we ran around like crazy people and got it all worked out, had surgeries.
But it's all turned out perfectly normal appendicitis type stuff, right?
Even the best kind, the kind that didn't burst, the kind that didn't abscess, the kind we caught early. So all things considered, and he's a super healthy kid generally, he's all good. He's upstairs now.
He's actually of higher evolution than I am because I still have my appendix.
Oh, you do? You're one of the 85% of people who don't ever have it out. So
I have my tonsils too.
You are in
like a caveman.
I have those as well. You have two organs you'll never need. Congratulations. Yeah. It's good to be back though. Thank you all for being here. Chat room, hi. There's a live chat room. They're here each and every Friday. We don't ever mention them very much, but here they are and they're awesome and we love them. Joining us today, we have two fantastic guests. We'll start with the returning one. You might think it's a little weird. I do. Patrick Beja back after
a
week.
I'm really not sure what I'm doing here, but I'm happy to be here.
I know exactly why you're here today, because this just seemed like the big happy family reunion I meant it to be when you hear who our second guest is. But anyway, Patrick, you may know him from all things Patrick. He does all kinds of cool stuff, mostly French language podcasts that you'll never understand.
Rendez-vous tech.
Yeah.
But back, and pronounced exactly like that. With you did a rendezvous tick. That's it.
Yeah. But back in the day,
that sounds to me.
He's had a serious foot in the English speaking podcast stuff, and people still love him for that. So he's back.
I'll be back one day.
That's right. One day you'll be back. Maybe next week. Who knows? Also with us, a first timer, a guy we all have admired from afar and gotten to know from afar as well. He is coming to us from Riot Games, formerly of Blizzard Entertainment. Ladies and gentlemen, Ghostcrawler himself, Mr. Greg Street. Hello, Greg.
You know, I think this is my first podcast that is not a WoW interview.
Oh,
so
weird.
This is awesome.
You were also
let's talk about WoW.
You're right. You were also.
I have a couple of questions about Paladins. You have just 1 or 2 minutes.
I'm just going to make up stuff now. So
yeah, right. Why not?
Well, speaking of first, so I think, and Greg, correct me if I'm wrong, but your appearance on the instance at BlizzCon at our live episode was your last podcast.
You so know that this is the case.
At
God.
Blizzard, right? I think that's right. It's also the one where he dropped the bomb that there'd be no flying in a certain expansion coming out, and the whole world dived 50 times in a row and still complains about it. So that was a big deal for us.
Oh, so much drama about that.
It was great. It was great. I couldn't be happier that it dropped there. And the best part is none of us as hosts even cared. We thought it was great that they wasn't going to be flying right away. But it's really good to have you here, man. Thanks for joining us.
Yeah, this is awesome. Like I said, I listen to the podcast a lot on my long commute. So it's great to finally be on the other side of it.
Yeah, it's really good. So thank you. And thank you, the Riot Gods, for allowing it to, I suppose, happen in some tangential way.
They're cool with it. They're fine.
That's good. And then Patrick knows his PR stuff. He's here if we need him. He can just kick it in and do what he has to do.
Scott, you should not be asking about that.
I really shouldn't be. What I should be doing is jumping straight into our top of the show stuff.
Herbert Hoover, Secretary of Commerce in 1922, finds infant radio facilitates news gathering, as do many others in high public office.
Yes, Tom Merritt, take it away, please.
Yeah, let's start off with EHSM2, a maker/hacker conference in Hamburg, Germany, coming up June 27th. To the 29th. Why am I telling you about this? Because in promotion of that event, these fine folks have released a video of a comic strip that is etched into a human hair using a focused ion beam. Let me repeat that so you can process it. A comic strip etched with an ion beam onto a single human hair. Yeah. Comic is by Claudia Pulfurst.
Yeah, so wow. I don't even know what to say about this other than isn't this would classify as do it because you can, not because
you think the ion beam is just showing off. Like they could have used a laser like everyone else, but no.
Well, right. Because lasers kind of done, right?
You know what I really need? I was thinking just the other day, you know what I would really need on my hair to make it like cooler? I really think I would need comic strip, you know, etched into my hair. It would make it everything so much better.
You're done with the buzz cut.
Yeah. Last week we were talking about how, you know, Comixology was going to get, it was going to be more difficult to get comics in your app. And you're like, what? Who needs the app anymore? Just look at your hair.
Just hold out your hair.
Just look really carefully at your hair because so small. So Tom, when I look at this video, am I looking at all that kind of jagged edge looks like the side, the rock face of some cliff. This is hair as close as you'll ever see it.
That's hair. Yeah.
All right.
That's what you're looking at. So I don't know whose hair. Who doesn't say whether Claudia used her own hair or not.
That's interesting.
And then as you get towards the end of the video, you'll start to see the comic that is etched there.
Yeah, and it's actually quite good. I don't know how they did this, but
yeah, I thought it lacked plot.
Mm-hmm. You thought not a good closure, not a good ending. Like where's the hangover?
Sure, I'm kidding.
That's pretty awesome though. Does it help me with toilets I need in the future?
No, but I knew you would like this story. I don't know why. Kohler is selling toilets that flush without you having to touch them.
Oh my gosh.
The top of the toilet projects an electromagnetic field that Kohler says is both extremely accurate and reliable. And it only flushes when you move your hand through the field. So it's not like those laser activated toilets at the airport and hotels and stuff where you can like accidentally set them off. And not only is it coming in certain models of Kohler toilets, but you can retrofit your current toilet with a $99 kit.
All right.
Well, you know, I think the toilet industry here is really one-upping the mobile phone industry, because we used to have keys on phones and then we went to touch, and there were, you know, they're thinking, what's the next step? It's like no touch.
Well, Samsung has that it doesn't work very well, but you can levitate up above it, you know?
Yeah. Mm. The kind of hover distance thing. They do that. That works on Wacom art tablets. You've been able to do that for a long time.
What you're saying is that you can flush your toilet with your Wacom tablet.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to that. Okay. You know, it's that or comic strips in your hair. But look, here's the deal I would like to know, or here's the question I have. When I assume these are for home, Tom, these aren't meant for commercial use, at least not now.
Those are the ones
I don't want to touch.
Right.
Honestly.
Yeah, exactly.
The public ones.
Right.
Yeah, these are for home, but there are already the laser ones for commercial use.
Okay.
That do the auto flush.
Laser or focused ion beam?
I would rather they be focused ion beam. It's a good point.
It's not going to happen. But anyway.
They can etch a comic in my back while I'm...
I'm all in for this stuff. Gesture control in real life things. Patrick, you guys are still decades ahead of the Americans with your bidets, because that's pretty sweet, those things. One of my greatest experiences in Japan when I was there briefly was the bidet I used once. It was fantastic. Oh my gosh. Why don't we have
this? Remember it till the day you die.
No, it was just that thing exists, that's a thing, and that the French have embraced it.
No, but because the little water jet thing integrated into the toilet bowl is one of the highest advances in technology in Japan. You've never used those?
I have. Well, no, not here. No, they're nowhere. Well, here, are you kidding me?
No,
here.
All those Asian toilets, they can have like 50 buttons that do all sorts of things. Yeah.
Like you go on the toilet, you do your business, and then you're like, clean me, toilet robot thing. And it just like pushes water and then strong water and then warm water, and then it just blows air to dry you off. It's
but
wonderful.
You have to touch it, don't you?
No, you use focused ion beams.
I have a feeling we're going to keep coming back to that.
All right. Well, let's get off of it then.
All right.
It's time to get off
that
off
toilet. Yeah.
Yeah. Programmer and data scientist at Undercurrent, Matt Daniels, decided, because sometimes you decide things, to compare the vocabulary of Shakespeare to rappers. He analyzed the first 35,000 lyrics from each hip-hop artist he could find, then compared that to 7 works from Shakespeare, as well as Herman Melville's Moby Dick as a second data point. Shakespeare ended up using 5,170 unique words in his 7 plays. Melville, a little more impressive, 6,022 words. The top 3 places, though, were all held by rappers. Aesop Rock, GZA, and Cool Keith with 7,392, 6,426, and 6,238 unique words, respectively.
Wow.
Also impressive, all the members of the Wu-Tang Clan came in the top 20, the entire group together at number 6. The closest in number to the Bard was E-40 at 5,207 words.
Goodness, that's amazing. I mean, you always hear about how, you know, you don't think about it when you're maybe watching a play or seeing a movie based on Shakespeare at work, but dude was pretty lyrical, threw a lot of words in there, invented a number of words that we all still sort of use now. And
yet pales in comparison to Aesop Rock, GZA, and Cool Keith.
So here's the question, Greg, one day in the future, they unearth mounds of, I don't know, iced tea records, and they hear this stuff. Are they amazed by the lyricism of our time? Does it become this like incredible find?
Is iced tea?
I think they are. I mean, I was sitting here thinking that part of that is probably that several of these artists are making up a lot of words. So that when you're looking at number of unique words and you're making up a lot, that just contributes.
Sure. Like skiz, hey,
good enough for Shakespeare.
Skizzy and yeah. Whizzle, and I can't think of any.
And in fact, I bet part of the reason Moby Dick has so many words, if you've ever read the book, is like half of it is devoted to very detailed whale slaughtering nomenclature. There's a lot of jargon involved in whale slaughtering that
would make,
for example,
sense.
Shakespeare yeah. wouldn't get to.
Right. We should mention, weren't you like a marine life biologist kind of dude before all the video game world hit you in the face? Wasn't there something like that going on?
Yes. That's where the crab thing came from.
Oh, that's right. All right.
And the death shrimp.
Yeah. And the shrimp before the crab.
Yeah. So if anyone knows anything about being lyrical about killing a whale, I figure Greg's your man. I don't know what that means. Patrick, where do you land on lyricism? I mean, the French, they've got less words than us, so I don't know what you guys have to say. What do you think?
I would dispute that fact, Mr. Johnson.
It's not true. I have no idea.
Well, I don't know what I see when I'm looking at the table or that graphic that they're showing on the site about the thing for the stuff. See, I'm using lots of words too. It's mostly East Coast rappers that are represented. I mean, you have Ice Cube with his angry face there, and Snoop Dogg, and a few West Coasters.
Sure.
But most of them are East Coast people. So
I can't find the French button. Where are the French button?
Yeah, I'm looking for that too, Greg.
It's off the scale, off the leash.
Yeah,
it is totally off the leash. The French would be like completely to the right. Is that the right?
Yeah, I don't know.
Yes,
I
the
think
right.
The French would be to the left.
The French are pretty left.
Yeah. are you guys okay? So like if you go to other countries, like even some, you know, burgeoning relatively new players in the world market in parts of the Middle East and other places have kind of a growing rap subculture, like it's a big deal in other places. Does France have like big headliner rapper guys?
Are you kidding me?
No, yes. I really don't know. Give me an example.
Do you want me to sing?
Yeah, no, I do. I want you to rap.
To rap, not sing.
Yeah.
Is it dirty?
No, the French rap scene is very, very, very active.
Oh, I
used it used to be one of my favorite. There were a couple of bands that were my favorite that were rap bands. We have ghettos, so we have rap.
So you've got it. So okay, I see what you're saying. So the culture's there is what you're saying. There's a cultural reference to whatever it may be, hard living, this, you know, hip hop's roots are in, you know, we've seen some stuff and now we're going to talk about it on stage. Here's a taste of some French rap, you guys. Listen to this. Tell me if you know who this is. You heard of this yet? Hold on. The guy's not rapping yet.
Bout de Juarez, siège en cuir brolique à gauche à droite, une petite albanaise. Si t'as vu le smic, alors.
I don't know if that's working.
That is amazing.
That's crazy.
It's really good. There's some really, really good rappers in France, I'm telling you. You know what's really surprising me in the graphic, though?
Mm.
I just found ICP in the graphic, and there's a lot of rappers that are using less words than ICP, which I didn't really think was possible.
That's
you know?
Crazy.
Insane Cloud Posse is kind of, yeah. So
who's down with ICP?
DMX is the worst one.
Yeah, I don't know if you want to call that out. Just say it.
Watch your back there, Beja.
Are you an NTM or IAM?
Well, it's
French
IAM.
Rap.
It's IAM.
Huh?
It's IAM. But I'm NTM, definitely.
You're NTM. All
right. It's Parisian, suburbs of Paris. And IAM are sort of the south. So I'm more of a Persian dude.
They don't have left bank and right bank rappers.
Right. No, we have But it's really funny because they go they mimic a lot of what the Americans do, and they mimic the East Coast West Coast rivalry, and they do it with these tiny towns no one's ever heard about. They're like, oh, in my village, like I F you up, and like, it's completely ridiculous.
Aix-les-Bains.
That's great. Yeah. I'm with Greg. That was just what that little bit we heard was pretty awesome. I could get into that. I think
good things.
Yeah. It sounded like some kind of Xbox arcade game for the first few seconds.
Yeah, it did. That was really weird. All right.
Well, let's pour a little out for the birds then, because a new study in Nature shows that electromagnetic radiation, specifically the frequencies found in the AM radio band, interfere with the internal magnetic orientation system of birds. They did the study with European robins, Erythicus rubecula. They exposed them to background electromagnetic noise present in unscreened wooden huts at the University of Oldenburg campus, and the birds could not orient their magnetic compass. This means that cities are likely to be having a disruptive effect on bird migration patterns.
Oh, that's interesting. But don't they, I mean, you see birds in cities all the time during migration, or you see them stopping in cities.
I see them by the freeway, you know, begging for handouts.
Right. Those birds.
Pigeons. Just,
that doesn't mean it's an effective migration. They could be flying in circles or something.
This is true. But what is in the air in a city AM radio wise? Are we talking just radio stations? Is that the...
That's mostly Tejano music.
Telemundo for radio, that kind of stuff.
Or maybe it is a deliberate ploy to get them to mess up their flying patterns, and then they hit the buildings, fall on the ground, and we can just like cook them and eat them more easily.
This is that's conspiratorial, robins? Man.
You know, the French.
Yeah.
Well,
when in France.
So like,
what are robins? It's a weird English word. I don't know. I'll look it up.
It's a bird. Keep talking. It's a bird. Go ahead, Greg. Go ahead, Greg.
Oh, I was just going to say the whole like magnetic navigation thing is actually a pretty big deal for a lot of animals. It's not particularly relevant to humans, but I was reading a story just the other day. This is really weird. I meant to follow it up, that when dogs poop, they often use that opportunity to orient themselves either electromagnetic or gravitational fields around Earth. And I've been
watching my dogs to see if they do that.
You're saying,
yeah, electromagnetic north, right? Isn't it? Or something like that?
Yeah, something weird like that. They always...
I read that too.
Part of the reason they rotate is to like try to... They use that time to recalibrate or something. It's really weird.
Yeah, which is really... That is just crazy. And so if all these species have these different sort of connections, like intrinsic instinctual connections to the way the Earth moves or magnetic, where the magnetic poles are or whatever, where we are in orbit, what time of year it is, all this kind of stuff, why don't we seem to have these? Or do we and we're just not cognizant of when they're
not
happening,
sensitive enough to them.
Yeah,
like, yeah.
Like I can tell you about once or twice a month, or here's one for you. When there's a big storm coming, I can totally feel it. Now it sounds like some old lady in the old farmhouse who's getting her bursitis kicking in when the storm comes, but it's kind of like that. I get headaches, I get a little achy, and I can tell storm's coming.
That's just pressure though, not magnetic.
That's true. But is it the same, I guess? I mean, is that an example of a thing a human can, tie into the greater nature around him and actually get signals that way?
Sorry.
I'm totally guessing here, but I bet it has something to do with the fact that our brain is developed really well for vision. It's developed really well for pattern recognition and memory. But if you look at, say, like a dog's brain, a big part of it is devoted to sense of smell. And the same thing is true of like fish and particularly sharks, who are also very sensitive to magnetic orientation, as it would turn out. Mm. So I think it's just what your brain has evolved to focus on.
Yeah. Mm. Well, it's probably
a good thing that we don't have that, because if we did, we'd be all messed up by the AM radio band and start walking into buildings and stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. Talk radio is dangerous enough without doing that to us.
Yeah. We are good at being paranoid about those things though. So all this talk right now will remind people of why they're supposed to quote unquote be afraid of cell phones or whatever.
Yeah. I mean, remember, this study was done in a laboratory situation, right? It's replicable. It's science. Mm-hmm. But we actually don't know what the overall effect in a real city is. They haven't studied that particularly.
Mm. Well, and birds are no good at symmetry, but we are. We've made an entire magazine about it.
Yes, it's true. And they have a great story about physicist Richard Feynman, who had the seminal work in quantum electrodynamics. You might know him from playing bongos or possibly from being the guy that smashed the O-ring in the Challenger hearings. But in 1975, Feynman and his wife, Gwyneth Howarth, bought a Dodge Tradesman maxi van and painted it with Feynman diagrams. Those are the diagrams from his work on quantum electrodynamics. They used the van primarily for camping. Video game designer Seamus Blackley, who you might know as the father of the Xbox, got a hold of the van in 2012 from film producer Richard Layton. Interestingly enough, Blackley almost became a theoretical physicist himself, but the superconducting super collider was defunded in the 1990s, sending him into working on physics for game environments. So think about that. If we had funded the superconducting super collider, you might not have got the Xbox.
Ooh, weird.
Anyway, with the help of Layton and Michael Shermer of the Skeptics Society and a donation from designer Edward Tufte, they restored the van and took it to Fermilab for a Feynman-themed exhibit.
That's cool. They're going to put it on display. That's good. What else are you going to do with it? You're going to smoke hash and drive it around town playing like...
bongos.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a Steve Miller Band blaring out of that thing. It's a terrible idea. Put it up there where people can see it, appreciate it. Is this like one of those custom vans? Did anybody ever have one of those?
I mean, it wasn't like high-level custom. It was just Feynman painted the diagrams in a black brush.
Best prom I ever went to was in a carpeted, walled, custom van.
Did you have Feynman diagrams on it?
No, that I didn't have. So. No.
Had like white lions or something.
Yeah, it did. It did. It had like big, it was like airbrushed animal scenery on the sides, and they were always like animals getting along, like a lion and a lamb, you know, hanging out, or a... You know, but animals would normally just eat each other on site. It was that kind of stuff. It was awesome. Oh my gosh, that thing was great. And it was all, everything was carpeted, walls and everything. And it had this sweet like tape deck in there. Oh my gosh, it was great.
8-track probably.
Yeah, probably was. Probably was.
And you could listen to the Feynman lectures on 8-track.
Right. Actually, I think it was Captain and Tennille, but whatever. I'll take it.
Hey guys, did you know that Richard Feynman was born on May 11, 1918?
No, Patrick, tell us more.
Is he French?
Well, actually, he died on February 15, 1988.
Too soon.
That's, yeah, way too soon.
Yeah.
I was so sad when that happened.
What else did you know about
Should I keep going with the jokes that we did before the show about me remembering
hey,
this?
They're new to everybody else.
Yeah, nobody else. And they're still not getting them. It's fine.
I'm going to send you a copy of Quantum Electrodynamics.
Yeah. You know, those poor Carl and Michelle Louise. When he passed away, they must have been so sad, his two children.
Yeah.
All right. Let's talk about nerds.
Okay. Patrick shouldn't be allowed on Wikipedia.com anymore.
Seriously. Right, Mike P. Kennedy submitted this to our Current Geek subreddit at currentgeek.reddit.com. Thank you, Mike P. Kennedy. It's a story about the U.S. Navy announcing the Navy e-reader device. Nerd.
Oh.
It's an e-ink tablet that has no internet, no removable storage. You cannot add or delete files to it. It comes preloaded with 300 books, and those are the 300 books you're going to read on it. The Navy doesn't allow devices like iPads. Anything with a camera, anything with an internet connection that could emit a signal is not okay on a submarine because it could give away your position.
Is anyone in particular making it for them, contracted to do it that we would know? Like, I don't know.
It is not sure like contracted. A Sony or anyone. Yeah. But yes, it is a contractor, and gig, thanks a lot. Make me scramble to find that
name.
Sorry. Ask me the one thing I didn't memorize.
The one thing we don't know. Yeah.
No, we do know it's in there. I just,
well,
forgot.
While you're looking for that. So I was incensed yesterday listening to a podcast where they were talking about the cost of somebody had written in from some government something, and they were talking about how much they were paying for things versus what they cost and stuff. If this turns out to be one of those deals where you find out these are costing the U.S. government, a.k.a. the taxpayers, like, I don't know, $1,000 a pop when they should cost, you know, 100 or less, that's just going to irritate me. And I doubt we'll find out.
Find a Way World is the company that supplies audiobooks to the Navy and also builds this e-reader.
Who are they, dude?
5 Cleveland entrepreneurs created this company.
Wow, Find a Way World. Built
first product launched
lives.
Was the PlayAway, an all-in-one digital audiobook player that created simple and immediate access to audio content and a high-quality listening.
They're actually advertising it on their site. If you go to findawayworld.com, there is a photo of them sort of partnering with the Navy. The E, by the way, is also part of an anchor because that's all Navy-ish.
Oh, yeah.
I love that they had to stick the word device on there just to get the abbreviation nerd.
I know. It felt a little intentional, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Big, great big Navy guy is going to be mad about walking around with a nerd.
There must be a word for forcing acronyms. There's because that's such a common phenomenon these days.
Acronym.
They do it with bills all the time. It's like, it's the jobs bill.
It's forced acronymia. Acronomaton. I don't know. But there probably is a word. Let's make one up like the French. All right.
Oh, I like forced acronymia.
Yeah.
I think
that one all right? Okay. Fair enough. Well, from bidets and nerds, we move to a reminder.
Forced acronym naming. Bam.
Bam. Done. And Nerdtacular 2014 coming soon. This is in July, July 4th and 5th, or 3rd and 4th, sorry. I always say 4th and 5th. 3rd and 4th. That's coming up soon. Tickets are still available. Nerdtacular.com. Tom Merritt will be there. I'll be there.
How is it possible that tickets are still available? You better go get yours.
There
are
only a few, is my understanding. So people want to get
on. Scott's probably holding the ones that are left.
Yeah. I'm looking at him nervously. And Patrick is coming. I'm so excited about Patrick Beja being there. Yeah. And many, many others.
You'll change your mind once I am there.
No. I loved you in 2011. It's just going to be amazing. cool. So please look forward to that. There are a couple of Blizzard luminaries coming who I'm not going to announce yet because it's a big surprise. So that's going to be rad. We have some other people that no one has any idea are coming. So lots of big surprises. Everyone's fun. Everyone's family. Everyone's friends. Come and join. Come conjoin with us in July and hang out with us for a weekend because it's going to be a great time. Details at nerdtacular.com.
Radio today is different. Powerful networks span the nation from coast to coast. Shortwave radio girdles the globe.
Big stuff this week. Let's talk about the announcement. Well, is everyone here a Star Wars fan? Have we established that, Patrick? I think you said you were last week. It's big there where you live and you grew up with Star Wars and, you know.
Yeah. I like it well enough.
Where are you at, Greg, on Star Wars? How do you feel?
I mean, I think I hold the pretty typical nerd view of it got worse over time, but it was awesome when I was, you know, back in 1976 or whenever.
Yeah. That's kind of where I'm at. Tom and I have talked about it before. We're excited about the new movies, so we think we may have a title. Tom, do the honors. What are they going to maybe call this? It's rumored.
Yeah, Ain't It Cool News says the official title for Episode 7 is likely to be The Ancient Fear.
That is so much better than The Clone Wars or Attack of the Clones, or Phantom Menace, or any of those. This is great.
Phantom Menace was so bad.
It was such a bad name. It was a bad movie.
The movie was bad, but I like the title.
No, you
Phantom
didn't.
Menace.
No,
you
didn't.
Cool.
I didn't like it.
No, it's bad. Patrick's wrong.
Well, Ancient Fear is kind of cool.
It's no Blue Harvest.
No, no. And there likely won't be one, but yeah.
Well, yeah, and that's what some people are saying. Maybe this is a cover name or a working title. But yeah, Blue Harvest was what? That was Jedi? Is that right?
I think so, yeah.
The cover name, so that when they were putting out directions and printing materials, they'd say, the production Blue Harvest is happening. And companies do that a lot. I'll see signs around L.A. with weird names on them, and you have no idea what that really means. So that's what Blue Harvest is. Ancient Fear could be that, I guess. Now it won't be.
It's a code name.
It's kind of too on the nose. I don't know. Blue Harvest sounds nothing like a Star
Wars
movie.
Right.
How about The Ancient Fear? Because I don't think you can do it out of the... Or the, because
so
right
it
now
it seems like
weird.
It would either be a working title or an official, like, this is what it's going to be called.
Star Wars Episode 7, Ancient Fear. It should be Star Wars Episode 7, The Ancient Fear.
What Maybe we get Darth Plagueis.
Yeah, I'm really hoping for Darth Oedipus.
What are you guys laughing? That's the guy who was researching immortality. It's the whole way Palpatine tricked Anakin into becoming Darth Vader.
Hold on, I feel like an idiot. There's a Darth Plagueis for real?
Yes.
Oh, well, then take away my nerd card and burn it, because I'd never heard of that guy.
I'm taking away your Navy e-reader device.
My nerd. Hold on, though. Is that
it's 300 books.
But is that an extended universe thing?
No, it was in the prequels.
What?
I clearly didn't pay enough attention.
He wasn't shown, but he was referred to.
All right. Tom wins. He beats us all.
Oh, is it Palpatine's master, or...?
That I'm unclear on. I don't remember for sure.
Well, we at least
I
can agree.
There was always supposed to be one master and one apprentice or something like that.
Yeah. The Sith are always go like by two. They're like weird. I don't know.
Well, same with twins. Jedi's, right? They always do the same thing. They're always
No, Jedi's the That's the whole thing. Jeez, Scott.
Go ahead, explain. I want to hear this.
The Jedi's, there's tons of them.
Yeah.
And the Sith, they always go by two, and there's only two.
I thought you meant right. But what I mean is during the training bit, there's always a master and an apprentice.
Oh well. Yes. Yeah,
and that's all I meant.
Plagueis was Darth Sidious's master.
Okay, can we just all agree
Zaka
that
Juta on the chat room says he is indeed the Palpatine's master.
All right. So. Well, the Plagueis, can we all agree, though, at least that it's a dumb prequel name? That's a dumb name, Plagueis.
And also,
on.
this is not going to be in the prequel universe or before that. It's going to be after the initial trilogy. So likely we won't see Darth Plagueis.
Yeah. Unless
so basically,
he did,
we just wasted
maybe he's
figure
ancient.
Out how to conquer immortality, and he is the ancient fear.
No,
oh come on! That
no,
just
you've
ridiculous.
Ruined it all. You've already spoiled it. Fantastic, Greg. What were you going to say?
Oh, I was saying the same thing. That maybe that's the ancient connection.
Shoot, two out of four of us say the same thing. Patrick, we're screwed. That's going to be the story. Just hunker down and take it. Okay.
That's what she said.
The ancient fear. Anyway, whatever. But regardless of any of that, if that is the name and not just a code name, I am so much better with that than any of the prequel names. I think it's fine.
You know what? I would be willing. You know how they got rid of all of the expanded universe as canon? Yeah. They're like, we're not saying it's canon or not.
Right.
We're not going to be. They could do that with the prequels.
Sure. Why not?
That's awesome.
Just say those were.
We're not saying whether or not it's canon.
You know that thing about only being two Sith? That's kind of constraining. We're going to get rid of that.
I mean, they're rebooting everything these days. Why not just reboot Star Wars?
Yeah. Yeah. Why not? Right? Because nobody seems to care that we rebooted, characters like Iron Man. Well, I guess there was never any Iron Man movies, but you know, they kind of start
like
fresh.
Rebooted Spider-Man. It felt like there was one movie and then 2 years later there was a reboot.
Yeah.
Look how great that turned out.
First one wasn't that great. I didn't mind this new one. It was okay. It was all right.
I liked them both just fine.
Even more importantly, the source of that rumor about the ancient fear, you know, it comes from Harry Knowles at Ain't It Cool News. And the person who confirmed the name the ancient fear, so his second source, was told him to refer to him as Colonel Mustard.
Colonel Mustard?
Colonel
from Clue. Mustard.
And I think that means it's absolutely accurate.
Okay.
It's the important part of that story. Yeah, there you go.
Okay.
At some point, it will make sense.
All right. Well, then, this makes sense. We're talking about retconning here. Somebody has taken the Star Wars prequel and recut it into a single film with less Jar Jar.
Yeah, so, this is not the Topher Grace one either, if you're thinking about that. This is a new take that's up on Vimeo, or was.
Oh, is it out there now? Oh, no.
It was there earlier today, and I watched it. I only watched like 7 minutes of it.
The lawyers have gotten to it. Crap.
That couldn't last, and it didn't. But yeah, it was, what did they say? Less than 3 hours. I think it was like 2 hours, 25 minutes for this one. It goes right into the Darth Sidious fight. They basically summarize the entire first movie in the scroll.
Okay.
And then they go right into the final Darth Sidious fight.
Okay.
I love this because part of what was so frustrating about those prequels was there were moments of greatness. Occasionally you were like, this is Star Wars, this is cool, but those moments were so rare. I love the idea of trying to fix it.
Yeah, just go back and tweak it. I mean, look, this is an interesting point that I just want to bring out real quick, given your profession. You work in a space where you can address things that have come before and change them. Right. Maybe just the consternation of some and to the love of others. But still, you have this.
Are you saying Blizzard should reboot WoW?
Yes. But no, I am not saying that. But what I am saying is like you guys.
No, but that's going to be my ringtone. You're saying that.
Right. But you guys as big designers, you can do this. You can go into a thing and in theory, you're improving it. But you can go into a thing and say, we need to change this because it no longer holds up, or because of these other things we've added, we've got to go back and uproot what we did and change that. This isn't it's such a expected thing in video games, even non-MMO type games. That's an expected experience if it's a game that has a lifespan that allows for updates and patches and things. So we get real weird about that when it comes to movies, when people want to reboot them or they want to take a movie like, let's say, I don't know, Back to the Future, and they want to do a new version of it, and everybody will just lose their crap because they don't want to see their childhood changed. But that's a thing we embrace in video games. Maybe my estimation that most people embrace it is a little out there, but to me, it seems like a more fluid experience. And I don't know, Greg, you want to speak to that at all? Like this idea of being able to do that in one medium and the other is just so untouchable.
I mean, I think sequels overall are tolerated more in video games, and maybe it's just because the medium is still in its infancy or something. It is hard to go back and change the story. To retcon video games gets just as much hate mail, I think, as trying to reboot, you know, any other fictional franchise.
Mm. And no matter how beloved, probably. It doesn't matter if it's even half liked. People could,
and here, yeah. The big problem for Star Wars was that there's really literally no more iconic movie or universe than Star Wars. And the problem is they didn't just, you know, do the second trilogy not as good as the first one. They really, really messed it up. It was horrible. It was very difficult to like. And even the people who had drunk enough Kool-Aid when the first one came out to think, oh, you know, it was okay. The second one will be better. But that was now, you know, 10 years later, they're really admitting that there's nothing to save in that second trilogy. Yeah. So I think the problem there for Star Wars was that it was really completely, they messed it up, or Lucas messed it up so bad that it really crashed on everyone. Mm. So that's a special case, I feel.
Yeah. By the way, next year, 10 years since the last prequel film. Think about that.
Wow.
Yeah. Weird, right? We are old men. moving on.
Wow. And was it 10 years between Jedi and Phantom Menace?
Let's see, 80, you know, way more than that. It was 84 to 99, I think.
It was 84. Okay. Yeah.
So it was 16. Pretty early. And then, I mean, people just kind of had settled into the idea that we'd never get any more Star Wars. So when he announced prequels,
but even, you know that's kind of funny. It's just 15 years, right?
Yeah.
And it felt to me like it was forever. Now, 15 years is kind of an understandable amount of time for me now because I'm, well, old. But, at the time, it felt like there was a complete, it was different life almost between the end of the initial trilogy and the beginning of the second one. It's strange to think that it was, quote unquote, only 15 years.
Well, imagine somebody seeing Sith in 05, or 2005, rather. Yeah, that's 05. Imagine that somebody saw that and they were 15, okay, just a kid in school or whatever. He's going to see this sequel, this episode seven, at the age of 25. Like, that's a giant jump. And so that's how I think that's, time is different then. I was 13 when I saw Jedi, and I was, 29 when I saw Sith, or Menace, rather. And that just, time feels, it's different now. Like, that last decade is nothing.
One of the weird phenomena is, like, teenagers today, their exposure to Star Wars is the prequels. And, like, for a while, you would go into toy stores and all the Lego sets were based on the prequels, and that's just what they knew. And the original trilogy that we think of as the real Star Wars was not something they interacted with, at least initially.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, my son was, he was born in 2000. So let's say he was maybe 3 or 4 before he could really grasp what Star Wars was. And to him, the prequels were it. That was Star Wars to him. Now I did the right fatherly thing, which was sit him down and say, all right, you're going to watch Empire Strikes Back, whether you like it or not.
You have to.
But Dad, I don't want to.
And he ended up
liking it. You can either finish your broccoli or you can watch Empire Strikes Back.
Yeah. He still said one of the greatest lines ever, which was, Dad, I don't understand why that. He said it this way. So imagine the innocence of a child and not racism on display here. But he said, Dad, I don't understand why that black man keeps saying Hopper. And first of all, I was like, black man, what are we talking about here? He goes, you mean like Darth Vader? What do you mean? He goes, he keeps saying Hopper. And I said, Hopper? So then I stopped and rewound and listened to this conversation on screen between Vader and somebody else. And the breathing sounds like, like that. So he thought he was saying Hopper the whole time.
The man in black.
One of my great Star Wars memories.
Darth Hopper.
Anyway, so that's something. Let's
talk about the ancient fear.
Oh, see? There you go. Hopper's coming back. Darth Hopper. We're going to talk about Apple and all this talk about them buying Beats, which is this headphone device manufacturer, audio, now has a music service thing. Tom, what's
Beats Electronics?
Yeah, what's the lowdown?
Is the top selling headphone maker in the United States.
Wow.
$1 billion in revenue last year. They make money.
Yeah.
Their Beats Electronics, their Beats music service is new and too early to call it a failure, but not necessarily a success. Not getting the like widespread update that they probably wanted. And the rumor is, and there was a video from an actor, Tyrese Gibson, actor, singer, songwriter, Tyrese Gibson, that had Dre in it celebrating that they're getting the money. So it seems like it's all but done. Hasn't been officially announced that Apple is buying Beats Electronics. And what's really puzzling people is that they're going to pay $3.2 billion if sources are to be believed. Why would Apple want to do that?
That's the question. I don't understand the they're a hardware company. They usually don't buy consumer level hardware. If they're buying any kind of hardware, investing in hardware, it's usually overseas manufacturing or something like that.
I bet it's not the hardware. I bet it's because Beats was starting to dabble with the whole Spotify like music delivery thing.
Mm.
That's what a lot of people are saying, that it's a way for them to ensure that they also have a streaming offering because their own iTunes radio is not picking up so well. But Beats is not that successful either.
That's the thing, right? You bought La La. Yours doesn't work. You spend $3 billion?
They still have money from Samsung burning a hole in their pocket, right?
Right.
anyone who tells you that they know why Apple bought Beats is full of bull hooky.
Meaning there's some hidden thing here we don't know yet?
Maybe there is, but we...
All right, well,
you're full of bull hooky, Tom.
I would love to hear a bull hooky theory here because I don't get it at all. Totally beyond me what they would want.
My best guess is that these companies see a symmetry between them. Beats makes most of their money on hardware. They have great margins. You know, those $200 headphones, by some estimates, cost them $14 to make. And they sell on image. They sell on Dr. Dre. They sell on Cool. Apple does the same thing. And they've been trying to figure out how to get their cloud system to work better, which is Beats Music, in order to sell more hardware. That's what Apple wants to do too. So maybe what they're saying is, hey, if we team up, maybe we can crack this and all of us benefit.
Huh.
And others might say that the Beats headphones are really crap and they're still selling like hotcakes.
Yeah.
So maybe that's of interest to Apple as well because, they do crappy products.
Because they make crap that sells like hotcakes. Is that what you're saying, Patrick?
Well, yes. But, okay. So I have a theory that this theory was put by other people and I just kind of glommed onto it. But Will Smith from Tested said he thinks they're buying their world-class marketing team. That this is a giant, really powerful bunch of marketers who know how to sell a $14 piece of hardware for $200 and do it very, very successfully. And that is where the value is.
Marketing team is pretty good also. I mean, they've got a pretty good reputation there.
Yeah.
Well, their head of PR just left.
Yeah.
So maybe they're buying a PR and marketing team for $3.2 billion.
Who cares about PR people, do they?
No explanation you'll hear makes sense. We don't know. There might be some secret stuff, but I've read a ton of people saying this is why Apple bought Beats, and it nothing holds.
Well,
honestly, we just don't know. That's an indicator that it is a complex interaction. That it's probably not one thing that either side is getting. Well, maybe Beats is doing it for the money. I don't know, but Apple is getting more than one thing.
But this is all beyond rumor now, right? This is confirmed that this is happening.
No, this is all rumor.
Okay.
I mean, the only thing we have is that video from Tyrese Gibson that got pulled down off Facebook, but you can still find it on YouTube because other people captured it, of him celebrating the new billionaire, Dr. Dre, after getting all this money from Apple. And the headline on the video says, after selling Beats to Apple, he's a billionaire.
But basically he's not... that's not the only thing that they're saying in the video. It's that actor guy from Fast and Furious.
Yeah, Tyrese.
Yeah, he's cool.
This guy.
My wife has a crush on him.
Just dancing around and celebrating. Oh, he's a fine
looking... He's a good-looking man, yeah.
Man.
Oh, yeah.
And he's dancing around and celebrating. And then you have Dre in the background who comes up and he's like, yeah, first, rap billionaire. And that's... the whole indication.
Well, the caption on the Facebook post was Dr. Dre on the night his deal went public that he did with Apple, $3.2 billion.
Oh, all right. And I'm not exactly sure what that means, but it's possible that this is an indication that, yeah.
The oh, my gosh, that's funny. But okay, I've seen a lot of rap videos with guys throwing around fat stacks of Benjamins, right?
Like, whoa.
Like, I mean, I know I'm getting all street here, but to me, that may not be enough because also, would Apple be into a deal where, I mean, I don't know why they, maybe it's no big deal, but would they be into a deal where it's like, all right, when this whole deal's done, Dre, we want you to celebrate in ridiculous ways with the video and throw money around like a freak in the video and talk about.
I'm telling you, if Steve Jobs was alive, would never have happened.
You think so?
This is, Apple is going down the drain because Steve Jobs is dead.
I don't know. The most suspicious
thing about the video, and I watched the video, was that they were referring to drinking Heineken. And if he had just made $3.2 billion, they would be drinking Cristal.
Yeah, or Patron at least, you know? Look at us. We know so much about what you drink. That's great.
Isn't Cristal like the crappiest champagne you can get?
I mean Hennessy.
Thank you. Thank you very much. My Frenchness approves.
Does it? All right. Any other thoughts on Apple, Beats, any of this? Nobody? Good. Let's move on to the Sword and Laser Anthology, Tom.
Yeah. Hey, everybody. We're very excited about the Sword and Laser Anthology. It's out now, finally. Veronica and I, and a bunch of help from a bunch of people, narrowed down almost 1,000 stories that were submitted by folks in the Sword and Laser Book Club to 20 great stories. There were more great stories than we could possibly pick, but we picked 10 great science fiction, 10 great fantasy stories, and you can get it now in either print paperback or an ebook. It's showing up slowly in multiple places. It's definitely available as an undrm'd epub from lulu.com. You can also get an iBooks version. I think the Nook version will probably show up next, and then the Kindle version, and then it'll also be print versions available from lulu.com as well as Amazon and places like that. But all the links that you need are at swordandlaser.com/store.
Yep.
If you're interested in picking one up.
Good, do, because it's great. And EPUB's awesome because even if iBooks doesn't have it listed yet, you can pull your EPUB version right on over there and read it there if you want to.
Boom.
There you go, everybody. Let's move on to the pop quiz.
America scores and wins.
All right. Everyone's favorite part of the show. Patrick's wondering, what could we possibly quiz him on today?
Well, not really. I read the doc.
Oh, okay. Well, three times at the plate, and we got a new one for you. But definitely got questions for Greg. And Greg, we're going to start with you. The rules are this. We ask you a question. You answer it quickly and informatively. If you don't know the answer, that's okay. Either way, if you get it wrong, that's what you'll hear. If you get it right, you'll hear that. Tom will keep score. It's all done really weird. There's no way to tell how he's going to do it, so don't even try.
I object to the word weird.
I know. Carry on. I know.
Is there a gavel?
There is a gavel. A literal gavel. So that's handy. Ready to roll. Greg, you ready for your questions?
I'm ready.
All right, Greg, your questions are Frost Mage related, okay?
Of course they are.
Of course they are. So here goes. Anybody who knows Greg, you know these are going to be good.
I'm just going to mash 7 through this whole
thing. I can't go wrong here because if I do terribly, everyone will be like, oh, I guess he wasn't really a Frost Mage fan after all.
Tom's going to mash. You're going to mash 7, Tom?
Yeah.
Do 4. Mash 4. It's a better rotation. Here you go. Greg, what is the first frost spell you earn as a Frost Mage? Or as a mage, I guess.
In current WoW, is it Frostbolt?
It is Frost Nova is the correct answer. Frost
really? Nova. Okay.
I play mage, you lose a point.
Well, you've been gone a while. Maybe something changed. Who knows? next one. What level do you learn Ice Lance currently?
Oh, it's right around 20.
I'm going to give you a kind of at the same time because it's 22, but it's around 20. Tom, you get to choose how you want to handle that.
He gets a half a point. All close
right.
enough.
All right. Good enough. Next question. What is the casting cost of Cone of Cold?
Wow.
Yes, in WoW.
Yeah.
2 holy power.
Let's take a look. That is incorrect. 4% of your base mana is the correct answer.
No, I'm going to give him a half point because it made me laugh.
All right. Fair enough. See, it's weird. How long are enemies stunned when they are hit with the deep freeze spell?
Oh. Oh, PvP enemies? Isn't it shorter for them?
Yeah, it is, actually. So we'll take either.
Is it 4 seconds and 2 seconds?
I thought that was right, but according to this, 5 seconds or 2 seconds.
under the Scott's world is the world we live in rule, you get a point.
Okay. Yes.
Number four, or no, sorry, but next question. What debuff do you get when you're using Ice Block?
Hypothermia?
You are correct. Nicely done. It's true in life, too, by the way.
Yes. I get it at my desk when I'm playing.
Of course you do. Tom plays a Frost Mage. Forgot about that.
I get it from an Ion toilet.
Get a lot of things from an Ion toilet. Next up, what spell finishes the cooldowns for Ice Block, Frost Nova, and Cone of Cold?
Cold Snap.
You are correct. Nicely done. Second to last question. What patch replaced Frost Ward with Magic Ward?
Oh, God.
Gonna dig way back.
2.2.
4.01.
Oh, that's odd that you lose 2.2 points, too.
Oh, man. See how that translates? Okay. Final question. How much more damage does Ice Lance do to targets that are already frozen?
Three times.
I thought I heard something.
I did, too. It was weird.
Is it quad damage?
You are correct. It is four times damage. Don't listen to Patrick.
And damn, he gets 4 points for listening to Patrick.
See? Look at that. Four times the points.
It used to be three times, wasn't it?
I don't know. It may have changed.
Okay. Nicely. They weren't awesome enough at three times.
Yeah. Nicely done. You've done well. Patrick, it's your turn. And then we'll
didn't want to do well, but...
He did pretty well. We're going to do Patrick now. And Patrick, it is your chance to answer questions about French politics.
That I'm going to be so terrible.
You used to be pretty politically active man when it came to this kind of stuff.
I used to pretend that I was.
There was always something about Jacques Chirac on your lips. So we're going to find out what you know. Here we go. What French politician helped found the Abolition Society in 1834?
What?
Which French politician helped found the Abolition Society in 1834?
Is it Talleyrand or?
No. It is Victor Chaurier.
Talleyrand was in 1791 when the metric system was founded, Patrick. Come on. Losing a point for that.
He could have still been around.
It could have been. Next one. Who led the French in World War II and founded the French Republic in 1958?
De Gaulle.
Oh, you are correct. Charles de Gaulle is correct. And you said it weird. How do you say it again? Do it again.
De Gaulle.
He said it right, is what he said.
What are you being for Halloween? Are you being de Gaulle? That's what it sounded like to me. Next up.
Undead de Gaulle.
Who was the first French monarch from the House of Bourbon?
Jacques Daniels.
That's not. I thought it was going to be contemporary politics.
No, you thought wrong.
The first Bourbon.
Yeah,
Charles V.
Henry the Fourth. Henry Almost. The Fourth is the first one.
I'm going to give you a half point for accent, though. It just sounded
pretty good. He's using it all day, though.
Yeah.
Next up, how many years was Napoleon the Emperor of France?
How many years?
Yes.
I'm going to say 8.
You are incorrect. 11 is the correct
Which
answer.
Napoleon?
The first one. First, I think.
Oh, he didn't say
the
that.
The third was not.
Point for an unfair question. Yeah,
fair enough. What was Nicolas Sarkozy, when was Nicolas Sarkozy born?
Born? Jesus. I mean, come on.
He wasn't born.
Greg got like Frost Mage trivia questions.
Yeah, he did. You're right, he did.
Which you weren't getting right either.
Yeah.
3X.
1946.
You are incorrect. 55.
Oh, wow.
Born in the 50s.
A lot older.
You were kind of close. I mean, you're 10 years off. What year was Jacques Chirac elected to president?
Elected president. Just a second. 95?
You are... Correct. Nicely done.
Woohoo.
Yeah. Straight on point for that.
Bit of a delay. I was worried for you, but Tom let that one go. Who was president of France prior to Jacques Chirac?
Mitterrand.
Hold on.
François Mitterrand.
Yeah. His full name is Mitterrand. His full name is François Maurice Adrien Marie Mitterrand. There you go.
So we'll give you 3/5 of a point. Forgetting three of the names.
I'll take
You'll take it? Okay. Two questions left. Second to last one. In the Simpsons episode, The Devil Wears Nada, what character flirts with Sarkozy's wife?
Devil Wears Nada?
Yeah.
The devil?
No. Is that your answer?
No, of course it isn't. Scott, come on. Don't be ridiculous. It was Meryl Streep because of...
Okay. You're wrong. It is Carl. But I like how you pronounced Meryl. I think that
it was
good.
The Bourbon King, Carl.
Yeah, Carl. Hey, Homer. That Carl. Why was Patrick... Here's the last one. Why was Patrick walking around Paris with a rooster tied to his junk?
To get to the other side.
You are correct. That's exactly
bingo.
Whatever you wanted to say was the answer. Do you hear about that guy, that weird artist over there that got thrown in jail for wearing a rooster on his wiener? Do you hear about that? That's a real thing.
Not.
Happened in Paris. Come on, get on the, watch the news.
Wait, what's another word for rooster?
I won't say it if you won't. So there you go. Congratulations to both of you for playing. Now let's see who won. Tom, how'd it go?
It doesn't matter, does it? Unless
it does.
Won.
It matters.
It's really close, you know? Like, I have to say, Greg ended up with 4.8.
All right.
And Patrick ended up with 4.1.
Oh, my gosh.
He Come won. On.
Did you lose last week, too? I think you did.
But I won the first time.
That's oh, okay. Counts. All right. Well, congratulations to everybody involved. We've all done well.
So cock your pistols and fire them in the air.
That's right. And get ready for forecast.
The future promises even more startling things to come.
It used to be a show. It's now a segment. It's where we predict the future in some small way. Tom, this one's yours. You want to do this one? Tell me.
Sure. This one just popped fully formed into my head this afternoon when I realized we hadn't written one down yet. Mm. By 2050, the year 2050, all internet communication will be wireless, decentralized, like a mesh network, and carried out by an implantable chip, kind of like an RFID chip. And old folks like me and Scott will refuse to have it implanted because it's just too weird and we'll be made fun of for wearing clip-ons.
That's the part of the prediction I totally believe, by the way, is that we'll think it's too weird. I don't
Not
know.
Having that injected?
I mean, my son will be 50, which is gives me some perspective somehow. Like, I should still be around for that, I think. I hope. All things going well. Greg, how do you feel about a chip in your head that receives all information all the time and it's just kind of the way things are and the new normal?
I'm in. I'll do it. Yeah. I mean, I talk to my phone. I talk to my car. That sounds like the future.
You
I'm
do
in.
It now, right? Like if somebody said now, hey, here it is. Some riot meeting and they passed him out on the table. You guys would just put him in and go.
Sign me up.
Okay.
He works at Riot Games, for those who don't know. It's not a riot meeting. Like, he's not an activist. He's out.
You're getting ready for a big, march on Wall Street. Yeah.
We're called rioters.
Right. You should be. That's good. Patrick, how about you? You're pretty liberal over there with your socialism and your cheese and your whatnot. What do you want to do?
So if we have like a Blizzard meeting and like, no, it's the name Blizzard for the company, not an actual.
We're not planning for a Blizzard.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay. Storm watchers.
I don't know the problem. So it's not so much that it's weird. That would be a concern. It's that when the next version of it comes out, you have to open your head again and put the new one in, or you're going to be left with the old crappy version, you know, that the new apps don't run on.
Well, go ahead.
Here's my thinking on that is how we don't care about processor speed anymore.
Yeah.
You know, it's just gotten to the point where the processor speed is good enough for anything. Mm-hmm. We'll be that way with storage at that point where you really won't have, you can do upgrades just wirelessly to the software, but you won't need hardware upgrades regularly.
It'd be just a flash, like a flash upgrade, like a, you know.
As long as you can connect to the network itself, everything you want's in the network. So
right.
You need is essentially a browser.
Yeah.
I don't know. They'll have like some new types of ion beam for toilets or something that you'll need.
The new Beats chip will be somewhere.
You won't be able to use the toilet without your RFID chip.
Oh, man. See, the worries I have are always
unverified.
My worries about things almost always surround the idea that something's going to break, because I come from a time where we are very wild west with our devices, still are in some ways, and you can't always rely on a battery, you can't always rely on a hard drive not failing, and you know that's how we are with our technology now, and that's how it's always been, because we've kind of seen it come and go, and they've never, you know, it's always something you accept, but it's never worked 100% all the time. When you talk about a future where I've got a chip in my head and failure is still a thing I expect it to do, that's when my old man will kick in. Like, that's when I'll start going, I'm not putting that in my head. How do I know that thing's not going to spin down?
Well, you don't even necessarily have to put it in your head. It could just be in your arm or your shoulder or something. So it might be easy to dig it out and replace it.
All right.
The local anesthetic.
I think Tonda Gosa in the chat room has the solution. She or he is saying, not chips, but wearable fake mustaches.
And I think you can that's what Scott nailed.
Google stash.
Yeah, the Google stash. That's it. That's a perfect idea. And you would stash there your information there. That's brilliant.
Exactly. It's so perfect.
Yeah, that's perfect. You put all your legendaries in your stash. That's what I would do. Patrick, say that phrase one more time. The mustache comment. Mustache. Okay, I want to hear how you said it. I just want to hear it one more time.
Wearable fake mustaches.
Oh my gosh. That is really authentic the way you said
mustache. Mustache is actually a French word.
Is it? Yep. We have you to blame. Great. All right. Moving on. Good job. Thank you for that. Also, one quick couple emails. We got one really quick one and one relatively not quick one, but I'll read them both. Here's the longer one. Mike wrote in and says, hey, Scott and Tom and guests. Just wanted to send some quick kudos on the awesome job you guys are doing on the current Geek Show. The show has become a staple of my podcast listening schedule. Thank you very much. That's very nice to hear. I also wanted to say thanks for having Patrick on so much. Honestly, wow. I love Movielicious, and I was heartbroken when it ended a few years back. I don't speak French, and so his native tongue podcasts are no bueno for me. I like the use of
French?
Spanish. Yeah. Oh. I love hearing him on Current Geek, so please keep him on the regular rotation. Thanks again, Scott and Tom. Current Geek has never been better. Have a great week, Mike. So, Patrick, I just wanted to pull that one out and give you a little fluff there, buddy.
Well, Mike, I have one thing to say to you. You, sir, are welcome.
Because don't expect it too often, because it's almost 2 o'clock in the morning where Patrick is.
The PayPal transfer is on its way, Mike.
That's right.
That's the other joke I wanted to make, but yeah.
All right.
But I miss Movielicious too.
Let me just say that.
Yeah, it was great.
Thank you. Yeah, it makes me very happy to read stuff like that. So thank you very much, Mike. You made my day a little bit better, because I have to say, with those three clowns, it was going down the hill since the beginning of the show, but now I'm happy.
All right, great. Here's another email from Tim Fells. Tim Fells, I think is how you say it. It says, are all my cat pictures being stored by Snapchat? I think this is in response to the news that Snapchat may or may not have been entirely forthcoming on as to how their servers work and how your images are stored or whatever. And Tom, is there truth to this, first of all? And what's the dust up? What's the kick up?
No, Nice Bike Mate did submit this to our subreddit, currentgeek.reddit.com. You know what? While I'm thinking about that, I want to give Atomic Space Gun credit for submitting the Ancient Fear story that we talked about earlier on the subreddit. What Snapchat was doing was storing some contact information without your knowledge, and that's a no-no, and the FTC busted them for that. The thing that you're also hearing the FTC busted them for is advertising that your pictures will disappear forever. When there were workarounds, you could find the images in the cache sometimes, you could take screenshots, et cetera, but not that Snapchat was like keeping a secret database of all your pictures. So your cat's pictures are gone. I'm sorry.
Now, I'm going to ask a question of Greg that may or may not be a good question to ask, but I'm going to ask it anyway. You worked for a company called Blizzard Entertainment, who has this awesome game. Everybody loves it. And at some point during people's WoW time, they probably start to feel like, hey, I can just type whatever into guild chat and no one's going to be the wiser. Or I can be a little snarky, or I can say something kind of terrible, or I can say something nice, or I can express my love for the mage I run with and I want to marry her one day. Whatever, right? Like, this is a place I can communicate. They've never had to do anything. Well, see, this is why this is a hard question. But do you know, I mean, all that stuff's stored, right? It's all databases and stuff. And if you can't answer that, you can tell me to F off. That's totally fine. But is all that stuff stored?
All of that stuff is stored.
There. See? Now, if it's all stored, it means probably nothing for most people. But if anything ever happened where the next great, I don't know, Hitler type turns out had a level 42 paladin somewhere on some server.
Godwin's Law.
They could go find his stuff and look at it. I guess what I'm trying to get at here, this isn't to put Blizzard under any kind of spotlight. I just think that if you use any device, service, social network, chat system, anything, including Snapchat, I think it's safer just to assume your stuff's out there, even if all it meant was one of your buddies took a screen grab of you showing your butt when you were drunk on a Tuesday or whatever. Just go into it knowing that, and then make your decisions based on that being the norm, it's not conspiratorial in my mind. It's just put you in a mindset that says, I'm not going to do something stupid in just in case, especially if you're, you know, 16, well, stuff's going to haunt you one day.
That's a good rule of thumb for anything you're doing on the internet. And, you know, Blizzard chat rooms, I mean, WoW chat rooms, whatever, Facebook, Twitter, all of this is somewhat public. The problem is, I mean, there are other people seeing it. The problem is Snapchat is supposed to be completely private. So I think that's where the difference is. And that's something.
That's their whole thing. I mean, that is why you use their product.
Exactly.
The ephemeral nature of the photos.
Right. Right. And so I have a lot of fans send me Snapchats, and they're all, for the most part, it's all just, hey, look at me. I'm watching your podcast while I'm working out, or hey, look at us. We're on vacation, but we're listening to the Instance or whatever. It's a lot of that kind of stuff. Once in a while, I get something nasty from somebody. And
Patrick.
It is Le French Greg, something.
It's a mustache.
Yeah, mustache 1220 is his name. Anyway, my point is that, you know, so whatever, these services are used for all sorts of reasons, but I just feel like the rule of thumb should be that. But Patrick, you make a good point. Like, if their whole thing is, hey, it's private communication between you and only the people you want to talk to, regardless of the content, and that's their commitment. Well, this is them being exposed in a way that isn't so much about, well, it doesn't sound like it's so much about them doing anything nefarious. It's just that they can't claim to be 100% secure with your stuff because they can't control parts of that, like Tom was saying. And that's where this is weird, because, you know, if you're going to approach that, in other words, this, okay, this is just, I tell my kids this, I tell everybody this, don't do something that's connected to the internet that you're going to regret, because there's a chance it'll get out. It's as simple as that.
I think the proper way of phrasing it is, don't do anything that you wouldn't be okay if it became public.
Yeah, yeah.
It's the rule of thumb that I think everyone should...
be prepared for anything to go public.
Yeah.
I mean, anyone who's used a computer knows that it is easier to copy something than it is to move it from one place to another. Mm-hmm. And you just should keep that in mind when you do anything digital.
And it's so easily replicatable. So you can just keep making them. And before you know it, you're the hot new thing on BuzzFeed. And you're 22 trying to get a job, and no one wants you because you, again, showed your butt on a Tuesday or whatever.
Or alternatively, you're the hot new thing on BuzzFeed and everyone wants to hire you. It depends on your butt.
That's
depends on the size of your mustache, really.
It's not the size of the mustache. It's how many comics you can draw on it with an ion beam. All right. That's a callback, folks. We brought it all down to the same point, which we started in.
Works.
Yes, indeed. Yeah. The collective works of Current Geek. Episode whatever we're on. What is this episode? I don't even know. 15?
I don't know. 16. 16. Yeah.
16, sweet everybody. 16. Thank you all for being here. If you want to submit your own emails to this part of the show, you can. It's currentgeek@gmail.com. And of course, Tom was right to mention, and I'll reiterate, our currentgeek.reddit.com subreddit is a great place to submit your stories. And we'll put them on the show as we have evidenced here. Cannot thank our guests enough for being here. Patrick, since you're third time the charm, we'll go to you first. Is there anything you could point people to that might be of interest to them about you?
If you like great mustaches, you can go to Twitter. And actually, I don't post about mustaches,
no.
But still.
But you always have a 5 o'clock shadow at about 2 in the afternoon, right. So you can check that out.
That is true. Not Patrick is where you'll find me on Twitter, and I tweet about nice things, including my French shows, which most of you won't understand, but you know, you can try.
Yeah.
So Not Patrick on Twitter.
Nice. Go do that. Greg Street, Occupy Greg Street is his, or is it Occupy G Street? I can't remember now.
Occupy G Street.
G Street, that's it. It's way more rap and street. I like it a lot more. He is on Twitter, but also just up to a ton of things. Anything in particular you'd like people to know about you or follow you or anything at all?
I mean, yeah, Twitter is the best place to discuss general things. If you want to talk about League of Legends, I am Ghost Crawler on the various Riot forums.
That's awesome. How's that going, by the way, the forum? It's like a throwback to your original forum days. Oh, man. I want to read those. Is it good?
It's fun. It really, yeah, it feels very old school. Yeah. Riot has a policy where they really encourage all rioters to be out there talking to players. So it's a lot of fun.
Well, that's great. And you can also obviously see the net result of his work when you play League of Legends. So do check that out. Tom Merritt, anything from you?
I'm just listening to Le Rendezvous Tech a lot.
Oh, yeah, listen to that.
D'un côté, c'est un peu une réponse.
Who's that guy?
Trying to learn a little French.
Who's that guy?
That's Jeff Clavier, one of the regulars on my tech show. He's a VC in San Francisco, actually.
All right. I am seriously listening to this, trying to like see how much French I can improve on.
Well, and how how much.
How about some French rap? Oh, that sounded English, so never mind. That's the name of the video is the best French rapper on the internet. So I bought into
it. I'll send you a couple of names.
Okay, I can't wait. That'll be fantastic. That's going to do it for us, everybody. CurrentGeek.com is our website, currentgeek@gmail.com. And of course, Tom's at Ace Detect on Twitter. I'm at Scott Johnson, and the show is at Current Geek. We'll see you next week.
Hi, and welcome back to Legal Geek. This week, the subject is whether textbook publishers will succeed in destroying unfavorable parts of copyright law. College textbook publishers have long wielded every protection possible under copyright law to try and discourage the resale market, as well as counterfeits. However, one limit in copyright law is the first sale doctrine, which serves to exhaust the publisher's right to control resale of physical goods after selling them to the first purchaser. This has long been the worst enemy of this very lucrative entire industry. Rather than embracing more digital distribution models, textbook publishers have chosen to double down on high prices and force student consumers into impossible choices. Aspen has begun emailing law school professors this week to inform them that the next editions of their popular textbooks will come with a so-called lifetime access to a digital copy, but the physical book must be returned to the publisher at the end of the semester. In other words, students will pay an exorbitant amount for a book that they will not really own. If there's anything the tech world has learned over time, it's not to trust so-called lifetime digital access from providers such as this. Plus, the publishers are touting these added digital benefits come without increasing the cost of the book, but the price should actually be dramatically decreased. You can bet if this flies in the high-cost law school setting, all publishers will force this change down students' throats in all academic fields. Consumers will then really be paying money for nothing, and the publishers will rake in the profits while doing an end run around the first sale doctrine. The bottom line is, sometimes consumers need to step up and fight. Otherwise, college and other schooling could become out of reach for the worst reasons possible: corporate greed and profit margins. Thanks for listening. Please provide feedback and legal-themed questions and segment suggestions to me on Twitter at BuckeyeFitzy.
Hello there, and welcome to another installment of This Week in Comics. I'm Aaron Steinberg, and I'm here to take you through the good, the bad, the new, and the noteworthy in the world of comics. And as usual, my reviews may contain spoilers, so don't say I didn't warn you. Holy molars, you guys. This was a huge week for comic book releases. We saw the return of Miles Morales in Ultimate Spider-Man, and both Marvel and DC starting huge events. Marvel with Original Sin, which I highly recommend, and DC with their new weekly series, Future's End. My pick of the week this week, however, is the first issue in a new series from Image Comics entitled Nailbiter. Nailbiter is a terrifically creepy look into the psyche of serial killers, as we're introduced to the small town of Buckaroo, Oregon, a seemingly normal place, except for the fact that 16 serial killers call Buckaroo their hometown. The story begins with the disappearance of a local cop who is trying to find out why Buckaroo has produced so many serial killers, and the search that ensues. As great as the story is so far, I think my favorite element of the book was the coloring, which really helped establish the tone of the book. Nailbiter is equal parts gruesome, mysterious, enthralling, and chilling, thanks to the introduction of great characters by writer Joshua Williamson and fantastic visuals by artists Mike Henderson and colorist Adam Gazowski. Overall, I give Nailbiter an A+. If you love a good thriller, you can't afford to not read this book. Well, that's it for this week. For more chicken soup for the comic book soul, you can find me on the web at www.epiccomicshow.com or on Twitter at Epic Comic Show. Until next time, this has been This Week in Comics.
Welcome to the first iteration of The Geekly Scholar. I'm Rich Straffolino, and each week I'll be highlighting an article with a geeky focus written with scholastic rigor. This week, I was quite taken by a piece on Medium by Paul Ford titled The Great Works of Software, an attempt to create a canon of programming. While in less ambitious hands, this may have just turned into a listicle devoting a paragraph or two to painfully obvious popular software, Ford takes the project seriously. While I may not completely agree with all of his selections, I cannot fault the effort he makes to justify them. How does Ford come up with his five canonical selections? To quote the most poignant part of the article, computer people often talk about products, but each of these five have come to represent something else, an engagement with hard problems that are typically thought to be in the domain of philosophy, literature, or art, rather than programming. This software doesn't just let people do things, it gives them a way to talk about and share what they did. His five choices for the canon of software are Microsoft Office, Adobe Photoshop, Pac-Man, Unix, and Emacs. Photoshop and Unix seem to be the no-brainers on the list. The former has become a verb, reaching a ubiquity that has made it part of the lexicon that very few tech products will ever achieve. For Ford, Microsoft Office has framed how we think and talk about work since its inception, even as we scramble to find alternatives. At first, when I read about Emacs, I thought it was a curious inclusion, but aside from its extreme versatility, Ford rightly points out its status as an open-source cornerstone. Finally, I really didn't think Pac-Man belonged on the list, other than for nostalgia purposes. Ford makes the argument that it was the first popular computing game to create a character that players could attach to, but I feel like if you wanted to include a game, there were better choices available. Overall, the article is lucid and fun, but most importantly, got me thinking about software as more than a product, as a cultural production that will have a legacy outside of its immediate utility. I'm Rich, and this was The Geekly Scholar. Find me on Twitter, at Mr. Anthropology.
Network. For more information about this and other shows, visit frogpants.com. Audio program so good, it's like you're there.